Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and for our last few minutes today, try to think back all the way to last month, April, before Osama bin Laden was dead. It was, you may remember, National Poetry Month. And during National Poetry Month, we did a series of weekly conversations with poets we admire. We also reserved one slot for a listener-nominated poet. Our Twitter followers tweeted us nominations using the hashtag BLPoet, and we got dozens of great suggestions. But one poet came up several times, and that was Tara Betts, a spoken word poet who recently relocated to New York and is a lecturer at Rutgers University. Now, why is our National Poetry Month segment taking place one week after the end of National Poetry Month? Blame the special ops. Tara was scheduled to join us on Monday, but we had to reshuffle the show to cover the death of Osama bin Laden. In fact, we were going to talk to Tara on Monday only because we'd rescheduled her from the previous week, when it actually was April, when we had to cancel her appearance due to the tornado warnings in New York and New Jersey. So, Tara, welcome to live radio. Finally, third time's a charm. Hi.
I know. Good morning, Brian. Thanks for having me today.
So let's see. I'll dust off this list of questions I was originally going to ask you 2 weeks ago, like, what about the weather? It's still so cold and rainy. Will spring ever come? Or do you think Donald Trump is a serious candidate for president? I mean, we've never seen the Obama birth certificate. Or there's no way Casey gets voted off American Idol, right? And, of course, you don't know where Osama bin Laden is, do you? I had to throw out all those questions.
Yeah, all those questions in the dust.
And how does it feel to be the official Brian Lehrer Show tweet-voted poet?
I'm really glad because, I feel like I've had that kind of support from poets, and not just from poets, but from young people, from readers, from people all over the country, from my work. So to get tweeted in, I was kind of like, wow. So it's just another affirmation that I'm doing the right thing with my work.
And we should mention that your debut collection of poems is out, called Arc and Hue, and that you are currently a lecturer in creative writing at Rutgers. And obviously some of our listeners are familiar with your work, but I'm sure many aren't. So would you read us one of your pieces? I see that you've agreed to read your piece, Gone Daddy Gone.
Yes, it's actually a new poem. It hasn't been published anywhere, but it will probably be in the Bop anthology that I'm editing with Alpha Michael Weaver called Bop Strut and Dance, which is a collection of bop poems. And there's a refrain in it that I kind of paraphrase from the song by Gnarls Barkley of the same title. So
I'm all ears.
Here we go. Gone Daddy Gone. The most I see ain't even him. A new bike, a belt, mama's check. He looks like a shadow sketched in the back of my head. A deep voice, real faint on some Sundays when I'm just waking up. It's gone, daddy, gone. The lovin's gone. 16 placed its crown on swelling highways of anatomy. Then Route 18 was marked woman. Danger bent itself in slender neck, narrow waist, curves ahead. Most drivers my age wanted a fast car to crash, burn, then say, it ain't so red, not candy, no apple. It's gone, daddy, gone. The lovin's gone. Now my words cut exact as a tailored dress that makes every one of them look. I imagine crushing paper hearts by staring at each man's chest who even blinks in my direction. It's gone, daddy, gone. The lovin's gone. Gone away.
So is that about a lover who was killed in a car crash, or is it more metaphorical than that?
I think it's more metaphorical because I've met so many young people who, in one way or another, they have a parent who's absent from their lives, and it kind of impacts how they look at relationships and other people in their lives. So I said, how can I do that in a progression of like three short stanzas?
Although that Route 18 is very real to people in the Rutgers area, right?
Yeah. You know, and teenagers too, you know.
You moved to the New York area not that long ago from Chicago. Is there a difference in the poetry scenes between the two cities?
Huge differences. I think there's a difference in the illusions that people make. I think in just the overall energy of the city, because there's so many more readings, there's so many more people, and everybody is always moving. I think in Chicago I had a little bit more time to be contemplative as a poet and to focus on just thinking about how to get the image to do what I wanted to do. It taught me how to be a poet to be in Chicago, I think.
And on your website's official bio, you actually talk about the New Jersey skyline inspiring you. Did you mean New York skyline?
Well, actually, I spend a lot of time in New Jersey and New York, so there's something about the pastels in the sky, and I think it's because of the pollution, but definitely there's certain points in New Jersey where you're in the state, and the pastels are just the most amazing colors I've ever seen. So there's that, and then just there's always this sense of a thrum in New York City that's always there, and I think I mentioned that one too.
I have noticed in Chicago, the city that you're originally from, that the skyline, to my eye, looks much more pastel. Like if you take that architecture cruise down the Chicago River and look up at the skyscrapers, they seem to be in all shades of bright, whereas the Manhattan skyline is either brick or glass.
Yeah, it's hard to get a good view of the sky. I kind of miss that sometimes.
You're going to read it again for us, and this poem is called Neither One Says Goodbye?
Yes, because, and that's definitely a New York-inspired poem. I noticed people are really quick to move in and share an apartment with somebody they're serious about. So I said, how can I do that? And I wrote it. It's a 10-line decima poem, so it's called Neither One Says Goodbye. When the key jingles, her face crimps. The lock resists turn, press, release, mirrors her taut goodbye lips. Listen, Gladys Knight and the Pips. Neither one wants to break the lease, but someone has to flatten first. All buoyancy deflates, flickers, like her words were muted by curse. He will try to persuade, bicker to bedroom. She closes her purse.
Is it a coincidence that the two poems that you chose to read for us were about kind of, let's say, imperfect beginnings and imperfect endings of relationships?
Well, I think I talk a lot about people because I think it's easy to get stuck in being a little dogmatic in a poem. And I think people can connect to a poem that's about a person in a situation that they're in, you know. So I think I do come back to relationships because I think any topic you talk about can connect to that somehow.
By the way, this may be a silly question, but that poem rhymes. Is that déclassé these days to actually have rhyming in your poetry?
Well, I think it depends on the rhyme, right? You don't want to sound like a crazy rap song where it's really just trying too hard, but according to that form, and it's from a musical tradition that's common in Mexico and Puerto Rico, it's kind of an ABAB rhyme scheme. And I try to mix it up so it's like you don't notice. That's one of the things I've always loved about Ann Sexton, you know, that you could never, unless you really looked at it on paper, you wouldn't be like, oh, they're beating me up with this rhyme, and I can guess what the next one is going to be.
Right.
And you're like, oh.
Yeah, that's part of the art.
Yeah.
By the way, since, as I've learned over the years, you can never say anything on this show that's even slightly incorrect without a dozen people coming right down on you, which is a good thing. We've had four people post comments that the song Gone Daddy Gone, which you referred to as Gnarls Barkley, was actually, they say, a Gnarls Barkley cover of a Violent Femmes song. So the Violent Femmes loyalists are out there making sure they get their due.
Thanks for that shout-out for the Violent Femmes, because I kept thinking, I said, this sounds like another song. And when you listen to the riff, it does sound a lot like the Violent Femmes. So that makes perfect sense.
We've got about 45 seconds left. You've worked with Brave New Voices, which is sort of the cream of the crop of young spoken word artists.
Mm-hmm.
What's the teaching process like for spoken word since you teach at Rutgers? Where do you start with someone who walks in and says, I want to do spoken word, and you got to do this in 30 seconds?
Well, I don't tell them to start with spoken word. I tell them that all poems start on the page, and that if you read a lot and you write a lot and you edit to have a story, that it's easier for an audience to connect with you, but you still want to use metaphor to make the story stronger.
Tara Betts teaches creative writing at Rutgers University, recent resident of Brooklyn after moving here from Chicago, and tweeted by you to be our listener-chosen poet on The Brian Lehrer Show for the Poetry Month for this year, which was April, and as you heard at the beginning, we had to delay it because of news breaking last week. So, Tara Betts, happy belated Poetry Month.
Happy poetry.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.